Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Indie Talks. Tonight, I will be joined by Eduardo Baraf, and we're going to talk about Blast Off, his new game, which will be hitting Kickstarter very soon now. But before we get that far, I just want to draw your attention to my Extra Life campaign and give a word of thanks as well. Extra Life is a charitable event run by the Children's Miracle Network, and Extra Life itself is the event that you can donate to. They're raising money for children's hospitals all over the country, and 100% of what you donate goes to those children's hospitals. Not only that, but it's all tax deductible as well. As I did last year, I am running an Extra Life campaign this year. While the campaign itself doesn't kick off until October 25th, while I'll be staying up with a bunch of my teammates for 25 hours playing games, giving away games, doing all kinds of fun things with tabletop games, I do want to call your attention to the campaign right now. You can donate by going to bit.ly/el-ben. That's the shortened link for my Extra Life page. Or you can just go to Extra Life and search for Ben Gerber or Team Troll, which is my team. And now I want to thank the first of our game publishing sponsors, Stronghold Games and Mr. Stephen Bonacore, who generously donated several games for me to give away, as well as made a cash donation to my Extra Life campaign. I want to let you know that they have not two, not four, not six, 10 new games coming out, scheduled for the rest of this year. Starting in August, we have Among the Stars and Diamonds, and then Space Cadets Dice Duel Die Fighter, which is a name that I love. And then in September, we're looking at Panamax, which looks awesome. It's commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Panama Canal. The first expansion to Among the Stars, The Ambassadors. In October, we're seeing the Among the Stars Expanding the Alliance, a.k.a. the promos, and then Kanban, an automotive revolution, which looks like another amazing Euro game, basically manufacturing cards. And then, also in October, Core Worlds Revolution, the next expansion for Core Worlds. In November, then, we have two more, Space Cadets, Resistance is Mostly Futile, and Medina. I want to give a big, huge thanks again to Stronghold Games. You can get to them at strongholdgames.com. And Stephen Bonacore, the president of Stronghold Games, thank you so very much for your contributions to the campaign. Now on to Indie Talks, episode number 51, with Eduardo Baraf. I'm here tonight with Ed Baraf, and we're going to talk about Liftoff, Get Me Off of This Planet, the Kickstarter that just launched, as of you listening to this podcast. Looks like an awesome board game. Ed, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I am super tonight, although I think my house is a little too warm, and I'm sitting here reading the rules for your game, and I'm really starting to feel it, because I'm ready to burst out of this house right now and go into a spaceship and go something nice and cool.
It's starting to get warm. We're hitting summer finally.
Yeah, especially here on the East Coast. We go way up and then way down. So we're gonna pop into Liftoff. We're gonna talk about the game itself. We're gonna talk about your Kickstarter campaign and a little bit more detail about that, how the game is played. But before we can get to all of that, we need to talk about you.
Sure.
I'm kind of curious as to how you got to the table in the first place. How did you get into this crazy hobby, and what led you to start designing games?
It's a good question. Well, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I've basically been making video games my entire career. So since college, I was doing independent game development, had some, you know, campus organization, and then some small failed studios afterwards, and then started, you know, went in QA and worked my way up, and, you know, I've worked for a number of places. So I've been making video games my entire career, but not board games and card games. And, you know, in that space, you know, who knew that people who like video games also like board and card games, right? So I always liked games as a kid, but it was more in, you know, your traditional Americana, like Monopoly sort of,
sure,
you know, shoots and ladders, is, you know, Uno. But as I, you know, started working in games, video games that is, I just started playing and playing more and just, you know, fell in love with the range of experiences, the range of fictions and narratives, the mechanics. When I was working at a company called Mind Control Software in San Rafael, the art director at the time, Thomas Denmark, was somebody who had made some card games. He made the Dungeoneer series, which has had many, for 10 years has been having updates. And he, was working on a game called Murder of Crows, and I don't know if it was stalling, or I don't know exactly why he was like, hey, Ed, help me out, work with me. But maybe it was, I think I was his boss at the time, so maybe that was it. But anyway, no, maybe I wasn't at that time. But we started working on it together, and, I loved it. It's I like making things.
Sure.
It just always happened to be video games, but now, I'm making a bunch of, board games and card games. Though, I'll tell you, it is a hobby thing, right? going from, if you make a mobile game now, right?
Yeah.
You can finish it, launch it in 2 weeks, get 70 cents on the dollar. Going and making a board game is like a year commitment to hopefully make, you break even, right? So
what you're saying is you're in this to get rich.
it's fun. It's fun to make things, and it's fun to, it's much, you get to play games together in groups with friends, and it's a much nicer dynamic than necessarily sitting on your phone and playing a mobile game.
Absolutely. Now, that brings me actually to two slightly tangential questions that I want to ask. The first being video games to board games. I've been doing this podcast for almost 2.5 years now, and in the past 6 months, I believe you are the third video game developer I've talked to who has made the transition into also developing board and card games.
Right.
What do you think is happening? Do you think it's just because board games, card games are becoming more popular and more folks are seeing them, or do you think it's sort of a natural progression? Because it used to be the other way around.
That's a really interesting question, and I'm going to add a little bit because I haven't really thought of that before. But so there's a couple things happening, right? So the board game and card game space is exploding right now, and I think it's a combination of, the time's just right, just like, cosplay and Comic-Con is exploding right now, sort of the nerds of the 80s and 90s now are adults, and they're, like, cool being nerds, and everyone else is sort of cool with it because they knew them in high school, and so... And their kids now just, are exposed to it. So I think, culturally, there's a much more openness to that kind of Kotaku sort of thing.
Sure.
But also, and, you can also think printing and manufacturing is cheaper.
Yeah.
But I think what it is as that has happened, the sort of games have moved from that sort of, this happened in, it happens in, it's the same thing that's happening in the mobile space with casual games and Facebook with casual games. And free-to-play games is happening in board games in a different scale, where as this audience is growing, there are more people who want to engage and have fun with games, and it's just broadening the audience, and as the audience grows, people make, this is, micro games come out of this, and more casual experiences, different, just getting out of that, it's not all miniatures, it's not all pen and paper games, it's, getting faster paced, more engaging, and so I see that as that growing space is then entrapping more and more people, and people who make video games, I don't want to overstate it, actually having done it, making a board game is very difficult, and there are a lot of dynamics, and it's not easy, but if you've, ran a 25-person video game development effort, making a board game with 2 or 3 people is easier in that regard. So I think that's sort of why you're seeing the transition, but I think it's just becoming much more common, and you're seeing huge, huge games. And this, it's lead the ways with the Cards Against Humanities and the Apples to Apples, and Target now selling Quirko and Catan and Ticket to Ride. That's a huge. When that means people go to those stores and then they're like, oh, what game should I get? And they pick Catan, right? That's
absolutely
a total huge shift. So, I really see it as a fantastic time in the industry, and it's really growing. So, or even Ellen doing that, I forget the name of it, but the flip-up card game,
It's
a card game.
Yeah.
It's a card game. And so I think people are there was always charades, right? It's just that those people who like charades now are playing these other games. So I think that's why you're seeing it more and more, but certainly not because there are riches. For the love of the game.
I mean, I've talked to plenty of people who have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's absolutely possible to actually have a career publishing board games. Some people, they're able to have a career designing board games, but those are the folks who designed, the Dominions and the Wizards of the Coast style things, but you never know what the next one of those is going to be.
I'll admit, you know, I through Thomas, I met Susan Ross, who's from Idea Duck, and made Quirkle.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew her before sort of Quirkle and post Quirkle. And, you know, she's the same person, but that's an example of somebody who, you know, now has transitioned completely with her husband to, we just make board games.
Sure.
But, you know, that's few and far between, mm-hmm. especially as more people take it on. So I think it's sort of like in the mobile space, you know. I mean, I was talking to somebody about setting up my Kickstarter, and they're like, you know, it's only like 1 in 9 that fund. And I was like, you know, when we release a mobile game, there's like 10,000 other mobile games that will launch that day.
Right, right.
1 in 9 doesn't sound that bad. but yeah, I think it is a interesting time. And I think, look, for me at least, as I said earlier, I love making games, and the opportunity to make something fun and share it with people and have them experience it is really what's rewarding to me. And I love seeing the process from, you know, I'm not the guy that writes a book and then like puts it in an envelope and like puts it under my bed. Like I like
right.
that make something and then have people enjoy it experience. Yeah. So, you know, so board games is a lot of fun.
Now, I'm adding you to my list of guests who provide their own segues, because you just segued for me into my next question, which is...
I just thought about myself.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to sign off, but I'll let you take over. So, board games have kind of passed their golden age, and they're in their almost super golden age right now. There's so many board games coming out. And personally, I see this as a good thing. I love having the choices. I love seeing lots of good games being developed and being out there. Are you a little bit afraid, though, that we're entering a period of board gaming glut?
Well, I certainly know a lot of people who have that perspective. Also, mm-hmm. when D&D opened up their rule set, you had all that, just
Boom.
All the games
yeah.
in this core set. You know, and hey, you know... there's examples in every video game, you know, from the 8-bit era to, you know, Facebook to casual. I think it is a problem, right? You know, having content that's not curated or content that's just, you know, most people can't tell a good game from a bad game from the box, right?
Right.
And as it's exposing to more and more people, I think that it does become a concern and an issue. And in particular, as people start seeing more and more upside, right?
Sure.
And like on Kickstarter, more and more people are doing tabletop Kickstarters. Some of them are fantastic, great games. Some of them are just basically being done by publishers for what
yeah.
it's worth. And
yeah.
Some of them are being done by publishers poorly. And, you know, I think that, look, like, anyone who's like, I strongly disagree with the idea that it's a bad thing, right? People are making great content.
Yeah.
You know, figuring out how to curate that content, get good content into players' hands, you know, all that stuff. Like, there are many, many ways, you know, people get careers out of becoming curators for such
sure.
things, and it's an opportunity for them. I also think it's less dangerous is the wrong word, but, like, board games are something you share and you experience with other people, right?
Sure.
It's not like, most of the time, you're not going to recommend a crappy game to somebody else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have this experience where, you know, people welcome people into board gaming. They play things together. I think it is inherently mostly cooperative and collaborative or competitive, but it's about mm-hmm. people being around a table. And
yep.
so I think that helps, you know, when you just download some random free game on the internet, right? Like, that's a different, there's no barrier. But in board games, I think there is a barrier. And I also think, like, look, in my opinion, Small World is just a better version of Risk.
Like, sure.
I think Risk is great, and I enjoy Risk, and then I played Small World, and I'm like, oh, this is just a better version of that. Now, other people might disagree. They like Risk Legacy, all that stuff. But for me, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy playing Risk, and Risk wasn't a part of my sort of, like, Stratego and Lord of the Rings of Confrontations. Like,
right.
You know, like, so I think it's important to sort of understand that and be able to enjoy it, you know, in the smaller version or the later version and stuff like that. I also played a game that was essentially, a game that was like a meant to sort of be a take on Citadels.
Yeah.
It was just worse. It was like, oh, this game's sort of like Citadels, but worse. And I was playing with somebody, and we were sort of bored, and they're, you know, they didn't get it. I'm like, have you played Citadels? And she was like, no. I'm like, well, let's go play Citadels. You can play what this game is supposed to feel like. And then you'll come back here and you'll... So, you know, I think you have, you know, a lot of people who are sharing with each other and managing that situation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people being able to be creative, like, no one should be afraid of competition or creativity, right? Sure. Like, that's just sort of, it's like, you know, being like the internet's ruining the world, right? Like, it's changing the world, but it's not ruining it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And I think board game designers, we have a little something going for us, too, which is that, let's face it, the hobby can be addicting. And if you're anything like me, you see a new board game, it looks pretty cool, and suddenly that little light goes off in the back of your head, and you're like, I got to try that. No, I don't want to try that. I got to have that. That's going to go on my shelf. So where it comes to the casual market, the Targets and the Barnes & Nobles and even the Walmarts now, that's more going to be just the big hits, the big selling games and games that can get into distribution. But when it comes to the hobby game market, I think there is pretty much a market for just about every style and type of game out there, at least well enough for it to see a good print run and to sell through.
Well, and you have an interesting dynamic too, right? So on one hand, Kickstarter is fantastic for that, mm-hmm. right? Kickstarter allows you to find that 500, that 1,000 people
sure.
and make the product for them. And then, you know, after that, you usually have more copies that you can sell and get to the market, and then it gets a life of its own and you do another run.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting dynamic there is, you know, I'm good friends with a couple board game shop owners, sort of mm-hmm. mom-and-pop type shop owners. One in particular who vehemently hates Kickstarter because he feels it's essentially being used as a way to cut out the game store.
Sure.
And, you know, he still considers that to be the hub of people playing, engaging, and buying this content and having that curation and having that sort of social fabric. And when, you know, everyone that goes to buy from him just pre-orders to get an extra sticker with the game, you know, he sort of cut out of that picture, right? And so, you know, so there is some hazards there when, you know, when there's a combination of the big ones getting sold at Target and then mm-hmm. building a Target, say, you know, near one of these stores, suddenly, well, Target has a broader selection of the popular games, and then if the core games are being pre-bought on Kickstarter, you know, suddenly there's a vacuum, and in those stores, they're not, you know, they're not selling and, you know, a difference, you know, of 100 sales going away is a
right.
significant
sure.
impact for them.
And now we're about to go down this rabbit hole, which I personally would love to go down because I really enjoy talking about this. And the hell with it. Let's go down the rabbit hole. My take on this is that, like you said, the internet doesn't destroy things, it just changes things. And the one thing that I could get out of a friendly local game store that I'm never going to get out of a Target or a Walmart or a Kickstarter is that I can get somebody who knows games to tell me about the game that I'm looking at and to ask me what I like and make recommendations based on that. What I can't, I guess I can sort of get that from Kickstarter. I can read the rules for most things. Some of them even have print and play. I can go look at what's going to happen. But I like the ability to sit down at a table with somebody who knows games, who lives games and breathes games and isn't making that game, and have them say, well, you like this? Well, you're definitely going to like this one. But if you don't like this, then maybe you should think about this one. I think as long as the brick-and-mortar stores can adapt to that, maybe carry some Kickstarter stuff themselves, there's nothing stopping them from ordering it except the price difference. But lots of folks on Kickstarter are offering retail bundles as well that are discounted so that retailers can get all the Kickstarter benefits and then resell them afterwards for the hot games that people are looking for that extra stuff that they can't get. But I think the big difference is that the brick-and-mortar stores can offer me a place to play, people to play with, and knowledgeable folks that can sell me on a game based on their opinions, people that I trust, basically. And if they're not taking advantage of that, then they're kind of losing out because I am more likely to go to Amazon and buy a 10-year-old game because I know everything about it, I've already played it. So they need to, I think, stock the older games, but also consider all the new stuff and the niche stuff that I'm not going to find at Targets or at Barnes & Nobles.
Right. I think Devil's Advocate would say, well, that's all true, but... you know, your new Amazon phone, you're going to go scan the box art and three video reviews are going to pop up right next to the image on your phone and just start, you know, the first one will start playing instantly. You don't even have to wait for the person at the store to walk over to help you out.
You're forgetting the one thing, though, and that's the addictive nature of this hobby, because when I want a game, I want that game that night. I'm going to go home and play it. And until Amazon perfects their drones, that just ain't happening with Amazon.
Yeah, they're getting... They're getting faster. no, and I would say also, just again, and this is sort of on the game store owner rant, like having a Kickstarter that has a retailer bundle of 6 units or 8 units or whatever it is isn't necessarily helpful, because on one hand, you know, when it's a major game, you know, from a Fantasy Flight or, you know, one of the, you know, they might want more. And so you get this, like, you know, Kickstarter limits you. It used to be it didn't get limited to 10 boxes or 8. Right. You know, you can only have a certain number now. And it also, most game stores actually only pick up one or two, right? They're going to pick up a couple, see how they sell. This is on the this is for most of the indie stuff, right?
Sure, yeah.
They're only going to stock one or two, and if in the first week or two they sell, they're going to order more. So paying up front a bunch of money, like, if you imagine for a second them having to do it, your business, sitting down and say, okay, I'm going to go to 10 Kickstarters, and I'm going to buy, you know, 10 boxes or 6 boxes that they're selling now for something that's supposed to come out a year and a half from now, like a year.
Oh yeah,
from
it's a gamble. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a gamble, and it might not even exist, right?
Sure.
Kickstarter doesn't exist. It's like not the same dynamic as an individual saying, "Oh, okay, I'll pay the $40 for the game, right?" And
right.
You know, maybe something goes wrong. You know, you can't. It's harder to build a business that's relying on it to put it out into
sure.
the future like that. So it's not. You know, again, it sounds like. When you see retail bundle, it sounds like it's like, oh, that covers off. They'll be happy, but it really is not the type of support that you know that they think would be most beneficial to them.
Sure, and I can see it working with bigger companies like the Stronghold Games or the Plaid Hat Games or what have you, where you know it's going to be a success and you know
right.
it's going to be produced and you know it's going to happen. But yeah,
right.
with indie games, with one first off, seconds off, it is a gamble. It's a double-sided coin as well. Without Kickstarter, a lot of these indie folks wouldn't exist.
I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, it speaks a little bit to some of the dynamics around game publishing and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you're going to publish a game with a publisher and they're going to give you 5 or 6% on the, you know, that's you're getting like a quarter a sale, like a nickel,
right.
like depending
right.
on the price point. And so, you know, this is very hard, you know, that's like having a successful game and getting paid like a couple $100 every quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like, but it is a challenge. I mean, I think Kickstarter is a fantastic way to make things happen. So
sure.
I definitely think it should be there, but I can also, you know, it's like you need like a Kickstarter or a patron for like the game store, right?
Yeah.
Like you need to say like, they need to say, hey, support us. Hey, core game group that's doing all this stuff, pick a local game store, be part of some, not a union's not the right word, but like be part of some coalition
yeah.
where you like put 5% of proceeds to the local game store and you get a badge and you get a hat and you get people who will back you because you do that and create a movement around putting money back in towards the game stores.
Sure.
Or something.
Well, I don't think we're going to solve this problem tonight between the two of us, but
I think we can do it.
It's always an interesting discussion.
Sure.
I want to get on to Liftoff, though. I want
sure.
to know, obviously, you had experience designing games. You've been designing video games. You work with teams that have designed video games, and you've alluded to designing other tabletop games as well. So I'm assuming you have a couple of things in the pipe. But I want to talk specifically about Liftoff. I want to know
Absolutely.
Why we need to get off this planet, who unplugged the cooling unit, and what the hell we're going to do about it, because I don't want to die. I want to live. So give me an overview of the game. What happens in Liftoff?
So Liftoff is 2 to 5 players, mm-hmm. 45 minutes. It's you know, a simple, mostly tactical game with some light strategy. And basically, you know, the idea of Liftoff is, as you mentioned, right, all these aliens are just happy-go-lucky on the planet, and then somebody just trips over a wire, and the whole thing's going to explode, right? So one of the things about it is, you know, it has an end point. After a certain number of rounds, the planet explodes, and the game
yeah.
is over. And
yeah.
the player with the most aliens off the planet wins, right? So it has a, you know, no one needs a game that lasts for 3 hours, right? Like, you know, have that little ending where we're like, we're done. but basically, the way it works is, so you start in the planet core, and then you're not really getting my hand gestures, but you start on the planet core, and then you work to the perimeter, and the board is a circle.
Yeah.
Well, it's a planet, right? that's made of these modular shards that sort of create it. Like, think of it as a pizza pie. There are eight slices, and they make up the level or the planet. And so basically, as a player, you're going to the perimeter, and then there are all these different liftoff points that get you off the planet. And these are, you know, meant to be tongue-in-cheek and fun. Sure. I mean, there's a rocket ship and a UFO, but there's a slingshot, there's smoke screen, there's like a Stargate, a miracle, all these different things. And what's really sort of, you know, I don't want to say unique, but special or dynamic about the game is that these different liftoff points can carry different numbers of aliens off the planet, you know. So for the most part, people are getting off on the same vessel, right? It's not like one player puts, I mean, you can, but right? Usually if a rocket ship holds six, it'll have two from this player and two from this player and two from this player, and they all go off together. So the way it works is players sort of start, the dynamic is, you know, working together helps, sharing resources, getting off the planet, but then, you know, it shifts when people sort of hit that 60-70% threshold and somebody's got one less, you know, he's only got three left. And then suddenly people start like, whoa, why should I get on that rocket with you? I'm going to go to the UFO. And, you know, it creates a fun dynamic where, you know, for me, I like games where everyone's in it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's some dynamic tension in play. And also is simple enough for anyone to sort of get. You know, like, I do family nights. I do, you know, games with lots of different groups. And it's rare that, like, it's been a long time since I had the same three guys, you know, in college who played every weekend.
Yeah.
And so being able to, like, bring out a game once, have a great time, and then, like, play some, you know, bring it out again, but not feel like you didn't have a fun time the first time you played it. And there's a lot of games that just aren't fun the first time you play them. That was really important to me. So you have these dynamics of getting the aliens off. And, you know, I think it ended up, it was one of those things which sort of worked better than I expected. Like, it was one of those games where you sort of, I started throwing it together, and, you know, I had a lot of clear ideas in my head when I was doing it, but didn't expect it to, like, you, like, sometimes you make something, and it's, like, a struggle to get people engaged and playing and fun, and you've got to, like, really tweak it. This is true in video games, too, but work, you got to, like, work it to fun. This one just sort of laid down, and everyone was having fun from the beginning, and then it was, like, adding to the fun. So, you know, I mean, that's sort of the core experience, and interestingly enough, I might even make the mistake. Initially, it was an island. Like, sort of in my head, I don't know if I was watching a lot of Survivor at the time or what.
Yeah.
The idea was, like, get me off this island. It was like, you're stuck on a deserted island. Because, you know, if you look at, maybe I was watching Lost. Who knows,
there you
right?
go, yeah.
But, you know, this idea that everyone sort of has alliances and working together, but then suddenly they start backstabbing each other. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you could build a ship, you could swim, you could have a smoke signal, or you could radio. And that turned into the rocket ship, the jet pack, the smoke signal, and the satellite. And so, you know, it just, I remember having the island and being like, who wants to be, like, some old, bearded, like, you know, emaciated, like, thing? Like, who wants to, like, being stranded on an island is not, like, a fantasy I have?
Yeah,
but being
right.
cool, cute aliens with, you know, and having the island explode, that's a more compelling narrative fiction theme to me. So that was that shift, and I think I was playing Mario Galaxy at the time, which has the, like, the planets with the palm trees coming off of it. So I sort of merged them together.
Nice. So can you walk me through a turn? Well, what happens in a turn for Lip?
Sure. Yeah. So first thing you do is we're playing, it's my turn.
Yeah.
You draw two cards.
Yeah.
And so cards, simple resources, there's fuel and screws. Everything can be done with fuel and screws, that's all you need. And then there are some action cards, which are like, move an alien an extra spot, discard, you know, make somebody discard a card, change the phases of the moon, which I can talk about. But so basically, on your turn, you draw your two cards, and then you can do any of the following four actions in any order. One of the fun things about Liftoff is, like, it's all about combos, right? So, like, you can really, there's no restriction to how awesome you can make your turn if you're really trying. But you can move aliens two units or two spots, right? So you can move one alien twice or two aliens once. Then you can pay a liftoff cost in place or to lift off. So in the game, you're walking around the board and you walk to a rocket ship, there's essentially a payment to, like, board. And sure. that's used as the resources needed for the rocket to take off. So a rocket might take 12 resources, but one alien coming on costs 2. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the second one you have 4, and by the time you have all 6, you have the 12 fuel required to,
sure.
for it to take off. You can play any of those action cards I was mentioning. And the last thing you can do is just discard 2 cards to draw 1. So if the board changes and you sort of were heavy fuel and you want to go to screws or
yeah.
you need an action card, you can do it that way. And then at the end of your turn, you move the moon. And so basically, if you can imagine, but you know, people can check out the Kickstarter or look at the website to see
yeah.
images of how to play. But I've got this planet, and around each of those pizza slices is a moon. And as every turn, the moon moves around the planet, and the location of the moon impacts how liftoff occurs. So mm-hmm. there's essentially 3 things you can keep in mind. The moon is either full, which means it's directly above the planet, it's half, which is anywhere else, or it's new or dark, which is on the opposite side of the planet.
Sure.
And so different liftoff points are impacted differently. So in the case of the rocket, it will only take off at a full moon. So even if it's everyone's sitting there ready to go, they got to wait for the perfect condition. Because if
yeah.
you take off when the conditions aren't perfect, you're going to crash, right? So
sure,
they're going to wait.
Yeah.
And so as players, that might mean you try to use cards to move the moon faster. You might use cards to stop it from moving. You might use the gargoyle, who I can talk about, to block right at the right time. So it requires you to be very aware of this liftoff point that can take tons of people off, but is also easy to sort of mess with.
Sure. Now, I'm no rocket scientist, but I'm fairly certain that's pretty much how NASA operates. So
yeah,
I think you've got a good thing going there.
Yeah. And then other places get impacted differently, like
sure.
More expenses, cheaper, that kind of thing.
Now, what the hell is a gargler?
So the gargler is just this, you know, these aliens, they came to this planet eons ago, and they entrapped this creature in the core. And, you know, he was totally entrapped before the planet was going to explode.
Sure,
Once that guy just didn't lift his foot up enough, you know, it's all going downhill, and he breaks out. And basically, other than having a gigantic skull, being bigger and terrorizing everyone, he becomes essentially like the equivalent of maybe a Thief in Catan, where you can play a card to move him to essentially block a liftoff from
sure.
occurring on different parts around the board. So it becomes sort of a thwart delay unit. Mostly early in the game, people aren't messing around with it too
mm-hmm.
much, especially because early in the game, people sort of are working together. So
yeah.
it doesn't really, why would I stop me and you at the same time?
Sure.
But as you get towards the end, people start bouncing him around a lot.
Yeah,
there's only one, so you know, you put him on me, I can put him on somebody else, but you know, you can only be stopping one player at a time.
Right. It sounds like it adds a nice bit of tension towards the end there, where things are really starting to, no pun intended, really starting to heat up, and people are rushing to get all of their aliens off the planet, and suddenly, duh, you just put that on me, and now I can't launch.
Yeah, yeah. You need when we put it in, it really needed that sort of thwart moment.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people could just sort of, you know, it changes up the dynamic as you get towards the end.
Sure. Now, one of the things that struck me about this game, and I've talked to a couple of designers who've designed games like this. I don't know if maybe this is just who I happen to be hitting on the podcast, or if it's a new trend, but 2 to 5 players, ages 8 and up, 30 to 45 minutes. Man, that's like the perfect game for me. I have a family, I have a full-time day job, I got a million other hats that I wear, so the times that I get to sit down and play games, I maybe have an hour, or it's something that we've scheduled for, you know, weeks and weeks on end, and finally everybody gets together, and we want to cram as many games in there as we can, rather than sit down and play, you know, a 6-hour game of Supremacy or something like that. Plus, having kids now who are older, 8 and 11, they enjoy playing games with me as well. So this game falls right smack dab into the middle of my, wow, this is a perfect game for me. It plays quick. It plays with a good number of people. I can sit down with my wife and play it. I can sit down with 4 of my buddies or my mm-hmm. 2 daughters and my wife and have a good game. And like you said, there's an ending to it, and you're sort of racing against that clock to get everybody off. But that guarantees that the game is not going to drag on for hours and hours.
Right, exactly.
Which I enjoy. How much of that was in the initial idea, and how much of it, you know, were you working towards that, or did it just sort of come about and you said, this is a good thing, I'm going to stick with it?
It was very much in the initial plan. I mean, at the time, I was playing games like Forbidden Island and Ticket to Ride and Catan. But I mean, those are just the games that those are the games that fit my life and my lifestyle and then all the people I like playing with. I mean, again, I used to play epic, you know, RPGs that were 60 hours and you know, I used to play, you know, big, you know, highly competitive, you know, leaderboard games. These are video games. But, you know, I think, look, again, it's a growing, I think you're seeing it more because it's a growing segment of players that, you know, want to be able to have fun, play something different, enjoy like a complicated, sophisticated board game, but also do it, you know, in a time slot that's reasonable because they have jobs and they have kids and they have responsibilities. And you know, I mean, for me, I like, you know, I basically focus on two sort of play experiences. I like the 15 to 20 minute icebreaker game, card or board or whatever, but you just pull it out, set it up, you can explain it quickly and play. And I like the next step, which is this sort of 45 minute hour tops, hopefully 30 if everyone knows what they're doing type of game. And, you know, I like other things. I mean, I like playing those long games. I sat down, played the Warcraft gigantic board game. I mean, I've played all these things. And when you have the time and you're willing to stay up until 3 a.m. and wake up wasted the next day when your kid wakes you up at 7, like, you know, every once in a while you do that, but I feel like, you know, it isn't necessary to have fun, and I certainly, I like that quicker experience. So, and you get to play more things and play more games, and with this deluge, if you will, depends on how you look at it, but with all these new games, right, like, you have, there's only so much time to play, like, but so games like, recent games I played, like Garden Dice or What the Food, or, you know, again, anything that's just fun, fast, enjoyable.
Sure.
You know, you can play a few different games. I think those are great games that I enjoy.
Absolutely. So I'm going to let the listeners in on a little secret here, Ed. You and I have sort of mastered the ability to time travel, which the government, I'm sure, they're not listening to my podcast, but they won't be able to find this out. But we're going to talk next about the Kickstarter, which is actually happening almost a little over a week after we're recording this. So we're going to skip ahead in time right now, and boom, we're at the Kickstarter. What can you tell me about the Kickstarter for Liftoff? Let's go through this.
Sure. Well, so, you know, I think first and foremost, for those listening, right, worked really hard. If you look at the Kickstarter, you know, we really built out this game experience. All the art assets are done. I mean, there's going to be tweaks when we, you know, get the final, you know, manufacturing. But we built this prototype. We made three of them. We built all the pieces. We carved them. We painted them. Everything, in, you know, is really pretty immaculate and sort of ready to go for this game experience and have played it tons of times. This Kickstarter is really about, like, fundamentally, this is the only way I can bring this game to market and for people to play it, right? So it's not really about anything more than, hey, I know this is a great game. I've played with other people. I think it really hits that spot we were just talking about. So, you know, hopefully that resonates with you and it's something that you want to, you know, back, you know, back me, back the product, but then get it. You know, that's the cool thing about tabletop Kickstarters is you, like, get it at the end.
Yeah.
But so the other thing, and this was interesting, I went through this learning experience in setting up and building a Kickstarter because, you know, while I've made lots of games and sort of in that space, this is my first Kickstarter, was, you know, initially I had a bunch of stickers and I had a bunch of extra things that you could get, you know, 15 tiers between $1 and game. And, you know, talked to a lot of people, read a lot of, you know, online articles throughout to James and Jamie and their blogs and all those things, really focused it in, right? So what the first thing that you should notice in the Kickstarter is you got the video showing off the game and a little fun, I made a stop motion with the aliens to sort of convey that initial sort of setup. But you basically have, you know, a dollar back to follow the project to support, and, you know, I'll save an alien in your namesake, but then it's straight to, you know, a backing pledge to buy the product. And so, actually, and it's a little crazy, but it's 39. And when you look at the, you know, on the air, it might not be it. But when you look at the components and the pieces, it really is a fantastic value. And I spent a lot of time looking at manufacturing bids and ways to essentially get down there, because that's really what, you know, if it's going to be a $49.99 retail game, having something that feels competitive in Amazon's and internet is really important. So that's fun. And then after that, there are a number of other funding tiers for a couple extra things, but really that's the core. It's, do you want this game? Will you enjoy it? I think you will, but we do think you will, and if you can back it. On the stretch goal side, some fun things. So we are in the initial, it's going to be the wooden aliens, like the ones that I cut out of Masonite with a jigsaw, but they'll be laser cut or whatever. But you know, in the initial, we have stickers that you put on top, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I'd rather have it silk screen. So the first stretch goal is to get that, which I think is great. And then after that, you know, it's a couple of different things that I really feel accentuate the game and the game experience within the box, and then things that add to it, right? So on the sort of accentuate, have a essentially the mothership, right? The place where you pull off all of your aliens. I mean, you can pull them to your table, which is sort of without the stretch goal, but with it, you know, sort of tracks how far you've progressed into saving all your aliens, and also will include a little bit of a quick guide to play. Mm-hmm. So it becomes that little nice little board piece that you have in front of you as a player. Going to custom dice, moving away from just sort of a standard, you know, six-sided die, which I think will make play and pick up faster, and it's just awesome to have custom dice.
Sure.
Also, additional liftoff points. So the game actually, so I had mentioned that modular sense. Mm-hmm. The board has sits 8, but that's 4 exit points to get to the perimeter, and then 4 liftoff points.
Right.
But then there's an additional 6 outside of those 4 that you can swap in and out.
And this is just the base game, correct?
That's the base game.
Yeah.
And there's a card in the game called Terraform, which you use to do that. So it's actually something you're going to be doing. And when you, after the first time you play, you sort of select them randomly. But then some of the stretch goals include additional liftoff points as well. I have some other, like, really out there stretch goals, but, like, I didn't want to... Let's not be presumptuous. Let's just...
Sure.
fun the game. But no, I mean, I think they're really things that add to that nice... You know, I like a board game that feels, you know, coming from somebody who makes digital games, I really love board games that feel like these fun, you know, whether it's because of the art or the components, like this thing you have that you cherish. I mean, you know, we can all go micro games and put them in our pockets and just have, you know, everything as small as possible.
Right,
and there's a place for that. But
sure.
I like having a board game, you open it up, you put it together, you play it, you take it apart. And so, you know, I think these pieces will really add to that if we can hit those stretch goals. But again,
absolutely.
Yeah, if that happens, that's fabulous. But well, it's just starting with the base.
Nice, yeah. And looking at the rule book, you sent me the rule book a week ago to read through and look through, and just looking at the pictures of the components that you have there, you said the initial buy-in is $39. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of components you're getting for $39. I mean, you're getting 104 cards, you're getting 50 aliens, a gargler, die, the moon, the sun, the 14 exit points, pizza slices, which I don't know if you've considered this as a stretch goal, but maybe making an actual edible board. No. The planet core, and then the actual game board that goes on top of that as well, plus the box and, you know, the instructions that are going to come with it.
And the free shipping in the United States.
Sure, yeah, which
isn't free. It just means it's included in the price, right? Yeah, I mean, and so the challenge for this product, which, you know, I thought it over a lot, and ultimately I'll know whether or not, you know, I really wanted to get out of that $45, $50 range for that sort of initial. I really think that's the right price point. So the challenge is it's got a high minimum. You know, the initial target for the Kickstarter is, you know, it's not $20,000. It's not it's a little bit more than that. So it's not, it was sort of in order to accommodate that, to hit the price point, went up in sort of that minimum.
Sure.
And, you know, that's going to be, it's a little bit of a gamble, but, you know, I think it's the right price, so hopefully everything works out.
Excellent. Well, from everything I've seen, yeah, it looks like an incredible deal, and I really do like the gameplay. Having read through the manual that you sent me and looking, you gave sort of an example game where you're looking through all the different turns that you played through. It's certainly something that has definitely piqued my interest. And without having played the game, but with ever just looking at it, I can say that you've got me behind this thing. I really think it's going to be a fun product, and I think it's going to be a successful Kickstarter. But again, we'll have to travel forwards in time from this point to see how that happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I will say, just as a little Kickstarter tip, so I sort of heard about doing Kickstarters. I had a card game, which was it's a deck of card and some dice, which I was going to do as like my first Kickstarter, right? Because it was like, you know, I could probably get it done for $5K, and right. I came up short. I could probably go find some savings and sort of make that happen.
Yeah.
And there were a number of people who had played Lift Off and knew when I was like looking for publishers and going sort of the traditional route.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, they gave me a really hard time. I thought I was being smart. I'm going to do the small thing first. And they were like, you have to, you can't not do the Lift Off.
Right.
Lift Off
right.
game is the game you got to do it with. And, you know, at some point when your friends beat you up, you go, it's got these components, and I had to go through, and I was looking at quotes from all, you know, Wingo and Panda Games,
yeah.
and all these different ones, Panda Manufacturing. What was interesting is, so the one Kickstarter lesson is, right, like, it is getting to the point now where pre-selling is the wrong word, but pre-publicizing your Kickstarter is important.
Mm-hmm.
Getting video reviews, blog posts, building up. You know, I worked at Disney for a number of years, and Disney, you don't have to do anything. You drop whatever you want, and then people are at the door the time you drop it.
But sure, yeah.
The rest of the world, when you're an indie, you actually need to build up this audience of people so that they're there, and the only way they're going to know about it is all these things. So if you make a high labor-intensive prototype, which mm-hmm. requires jigsaws, mm-hmm. and, you know, pasting on boards and cutting out little meeples and hand painting them and all that stuff. And you can see these guys also on the Lift Off Facebook page. We've been showing pictures of them in weird places and having fun with them. But like, if you're going to go that route, you might find yourself in the situation I found myself in, which is there are literally only three prototypes of this game in existence, right? They all they took like weeks and weeks and weeks to hand make, right?
Sure.
So as it became clear that I had to be sending it out, you know, it became this thing where, you know, I could only, you know, if I send out all three, I can't even take a picture of it. I don't even have anything anymore. So,
right?
It's very difficult. Whereas if you do a card game with some dice, you go, you know, print it on GameCraft or whatever. You send out 30 versions. People play it. They don't. You don't care. They give it back. You don't. But, you know, it's a different thing. And I've been absolutely blown away with the board game community and the Twitter community around the board game community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had sent version of the game, one prototype for review with Geek Dad, and you know, he was checking it out. And then Board Game Duel wanted to take a look at it,
mm-hmm.
and they're in Washington, and he's in Seattle. You know, I don't remember the exact, but he literally, I was like trying to figure out timing, and I needed it back because like I had to take it to game stores, and he literally drove it to her house and gave it to her, like, you know, whatever. I don't know. Maybe it was an hour. Maybe it was an hour and a half. Maybe it was 20 minutes. Maybe they're neighbors. I don't know. But, like that's crazy. Like, that's very much – and everything I've seen is people being willing to help out or, you know, hey, I wanted to make a animated GIF for some banner ad, and, like, I don't know how to do that. And someone's like, hey, I'll do it. And they turned it over, and they did, you know, it's that kind of community. I really – if there's – emphasizing, you know, everyone sort of says, like, you know, spend time on Twitter and, you know, build up a base and get a certain amount of thought. I think that misses the point of the value. The value to me has been, you know, ultimately we'll see how many followers you have translates into people who actually take action.
Sure, absolutely.
But the amount of value I've gotten just from people giving me references to other people, or connecting me with, you know, it's like this gigantic room where everyone can literally just talk to everyone directly. So somebody could be like, you can be having an argument, and, you know, I was talking to somebody about some component of the game, and so Stonemeyer, Jamie has a, they have the Kickstarter blog pages and all that, huge, and he, like, we were discussing it. It was about, you know, whether or not to have, like, a sticker tier in between.
Yeah.
We're, like, talking about it, and he's just like, hey, Jamie, what do you think? And, like, I was like, you just like called in the boss. Like, what is but like on Twitter he comes. Like he's oh hey, random people talking about some random thing. This is my opinion. And you're like, what just happened? That wasn't fair. But it was super useful, and I think it's improved the product.
No, I mean, I agree with you, absolutely, and it's a lot of who you know and who is listening to you, but the neat things about, particularly, I've found Twitter and Google Plus, is that you can say things like that. You can go, hey, Jamie, so-and-so, blah, 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 and there's a pretty good chance he'll pop in and say, well, yeah, or, well, no, and here's what I think about it, and finding those interactions is really cool. And I mean, if it wasn't for me doing a podcast with Teal about Shadow Thrones, I would not have met you, and then we wouldn't be doing this podcast right here. I get a lot of my guests from talking to other folks who I've had on earlier. And hopefully, you know, once you're successful, you'll spread the word as well, and we'll get the next person on here. But unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time.
Sure.
And I do want to cover just a couple of real quick things.
Put us back on track.
I am the same way, and it's my fault for jumping down that local game store rabbit hole as well. I'm sure they need a good 5 or 6 minutes. But online, you mentioned that there is the Liftoff Facebook page, and all of these things, there'll be links in the show notes, so anybody listening, you can just click on the links in the show notes or go to the site or go to Facebook and search for Liftoff, Get Me Off This Planet, and you'll find that. And if you go to Kickstarter and search for Liftoff, obviously that will pop up as well, and I'll have a link there. And what I generally do in podcasts, in the show notes for folks who are just launching Kickstarter, is there'll also be a link to the little Kickstarter widget as well. So anybody listening to this can just click on that, and it'll bring you right to the Kickstarter. Is there anywhere else that we can find you or find out more information about Liftoff online?
Well, I think basically the key points are there's the Kickstarter page, which is an amazingly great way to talk about a product, right?
It's a
really nice, focused approach to it. So there's the Kickstarter page. There's the Facebook page, which is, where lots of updates and new information comes out. I think for the board game crowd, there's, it's up on Board Game Geek, and you can check it out there. So those are the three main ones. I'd also say, for me personally, I'm at ebaroff, on Twitter, and I'm fairly active, and you can just go to baroff.com to, get various things that I've been working on. But those will also have links out to these different things. But those, I've sort of focused, I think we will have a website. Eventually, the funny thing is, like, between the Kickstarter page and, just having the Facebook page as, like, a drop zone, I really felt that covered it. So keep it easy.
Absolutely. Now, there's one other question that I do ask all of my guests, and you touched on this earlier, that board games is fundamentally a social thing, board and card games. You're sitting down at a table with a bunch of your friends or your family, and you're not just staring out the cards and mumbling. Well, hopefully you're not just staring out the cards and mumbling to yourself. You're actually having a conversation with these people, maybe giving some advice, going, you just got me. You're talking about whatever it may be that's going on around in the world around you.
Sure.
That's one of the reasons why I love this hobby. But for me, it's not a real, true social occasion unless there is food and drink involved.
Sure.
So when you sit down to play your game or play somebody else's game, you're sitting down at a board game event, what is your favorite snack or drink?
Wow, that's a good question. So on the snack side, I actually I appreciate when somebody brings a snack of any type that's not like your standard fare, right? When you go to a board game event or board game night, or people have you over, and like somebody's like, "Oh, here's some mochi that we made," or like, actually rather than just chips and popcorn, we're gonna do, we did sliders, like. Hallelujah! Right? I don't get your games greasy. I like that social event. I like it when you're around and it's coupled with a meal or dinner or lunch or it sort of bleeds in and out of eating and debauchery and but I'd have to say I'm trying to think. I don't have a picture. I don't have anyone on me right now, but I've been having these little, it's sort of a snack. Like, at my next game night, I will include this. You can get them at, like, 7-Eleven. They're these, like, little, it's like sesame seeds, like, in, like, butter, sugar, like, it's like a peanut brittle.
Sure.
But it's a sesame seed brittle. And, like, if you're drinking, like, soda or energy drinks or something, like, super, that kind of carbonated.
Yeah.
Oftentimes chemical thing, they're like awesome. I'm just like, that's now like my go-to.
Excellent. Now, here's an exclusive from me, which doesn't happen all that often on my own podcast even, but if you happen to live anywhere near a Chinatown or anywhere near a Chinese market, you can walk into the snack section, and there are four or five different varieties of exactly what you just mentioned, and they are all amazing. So good. Yeah, that sounds like a great snack. So, excellent. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck with Liftoff, the Kickstarter.
Thank you.
I think you got a really good product here, so I am very happy to say that I will probably be backing it, and I look forward to seeing it succeed. So
yeah.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely.
All right, then. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Have a good night. Thanks for having me.